King of Diamonds by Amanda Watkins.
I've always wanted to be a journalist, preferably for one of the high-profile nationals, but in this business, you have to earn your stripes. The Chelford Gazette is my third provincial newspaper, and there isn't much about church summer fetes, agricultural shows, neighbourly disputes, or writing obituaries I don't know. This wasn't part of my life plan, but I couldn't escape. The Nationals wanted more experience, more proof that I could appeal to a wider readership. But that was unlikely to happen while I was still reporting the best in show, the council's latest cuts, or what Ofsted had to say about the school. I was stuck in a rut. Then one day, a few weeks ago, the editor said something that caught my attention. He was wafting through the office, which he does most days, presumably to convince us, and possibly himself, that he was very busy and had a deadline to meet, when he said, "Oh, if anyone's interested, remember that bloke who was thought to be a notorious jewel thief? Archie somebody or other. Well, he's just died. His widow put a notice in the Telegraph. Just thought I'd mention it as we covered it at the time." My deskmate, Nick Bradshaw, a local lad who'd just started at the newspaper, said he thought it was about 6 or 7 years ago. There had been several high-profile robberies, mostly in the south of France, of valuable jewellery, mostly diamonds. The thief was very clever and never left a trace. The robberies were carried out with remarkable speed and agility, apparently bypassing some really sophisticated alarms. Suspicion fell on a local man, Archibald Tudge. Not because of any forensic evidence, or even any eyewitnesses, but because he used to be in the gem trade, specialising in diamonds, and he'd been out of the country when at least two of the burglaries took place. No arrest was ever made, and the Tudges sold up and moved away, never to be heard of again. Until now, of course. This story piqued my interest, and I wanted to know more, so I went down and retrieved the papers from the archives. The Tudges had lived at No. 3 Albany Row, a row of early Victorian terraced houses with sash windows and high ceilings. Archibald's job had entailed him travelling quite a bit, so it wasn't unusual for him to be out of the country from time to time, often to Brussels and, once in a while, to South Africa. The Chelford Gazette made much of this somewhat tenuous local link to international crime. Interpol were involved, and so was a local police officer, Detective Chief Superintendent Lawrence Mayhew. In fact, DCS Mayhew became obsessed, and the Tudges had to seek legal advice and tried to take out an injunction to prevent further harassment, as they put it. In interviews, DCS Mayhew contended that, following many consultations with officers from Interpol, it was believed that, although a lot of the stolen items had been recovered, there was a small bag of diamonds unaccounted for. It may have been a small bag, but apparently it was worth a small fortune. With the threat of legal action hanging over him and the chief constable telling him he was making an ass of himself, Lawrence Mayhew gave up. Not just his pursuit of Archibald Tudge, but his job. He took early retirement. There were a few break-ins at 3 Albany Row, presumably in the hope that there were some stray diamonds lying around, but eventually interest petered out. I thought that was the most interesting thing to have happened in Chelford for a long time. So I asked the editor if I could go to Albany Row and talk to the current residents and ask them if they remember the Tudges and what their take on the story was at the time. He wasn't too enthusiastic, but said, OK, I could go ahead, but it had to be interesting. And in any case, it would only go in the paper if it was a slow news week, and, by the way, I couldn't have a photographer, And, oh, actually, it would be better if I did it in my own time. Oh, well, better than nothing, I thought. Well, as it happened, my colleague Nick came with me. We had to wait about 3 weeks. He and I were manning the news desk one weekend, so we took a day off the following week in lieu. We thought we'd go straight to number 3 Albany Road to see what the current owners thought, and then move on to the neighbouring houses. We rang the doorbell, and an elderly lady came to the door. A dog was barking in the background. We introduced ourselves and briefly explained why we were there. She said she knew nothing about the history of the house, as she was just house and pet sitting. Mr. and Mrs. Beasley were away for a few days and would be back in 3 days' time if we wanted to talk to them. We thanked her and moved on to number 5 next door. No answer, which was a little odd, as I could have sworn I saw someone at an upstairs window. Oh well, must have been a reflected cloud, I guess. By lunchtime, we were feeling somewhat dispirited. A lot of the houses had changed hands, and of those residents who were around at the time, hardly anyone could tell us much about the Tudges. Apparently, they appeared pleasant enough, but kept themselves to themselves and didn't live at all ostentatiously. "I think we've drawn a blank," said Nick. "It looks as though they really were just an ordinary suburban couple going about their daily business and not involved in international jewel theft at all." I had to agree with him. There was nothing for us here. We were feeling quite hungry by then, so headed for the nearest pub. It was early, and there were only 2 other customers in there, but the landlord was an affable, chatty bloke. Oh, yes, he remembered the stories circulating about the Tudges. Not that they were regulars, he said, but of course they were often the main topic of conversation at the time. However, DCS Mayhew did become a regular and could put away a fair amount of beer and whisky chasers of an evening. He ranted on about his nemesis quite a bit and repeatedly vowed to keep an eye on that villain. "I know he's hiding something." After he'd had a view, he got morbid and slurry, and it all sounded rather sad. We thanked the landlord and left. "I think we've come to the end of the road with this, Nick," I said. "We'll have to look for another story with which to make our mark in the world of journalism." He agreed with me and we headed for the car. "Wait, look," said Nick in the car park. He pointed to Albany Row, which was within shouting distance. And sure enough, there were 2 people coming out of number 5. A neat woman clutching a handbag, and a heavy-set man with a bushy beard, who looked a bit like Brian Blessed. And yet, when we'd knocked on the door, there was no answer. We sprinted over and introduced ourselves. He said they were Mr. and Mrs. Merton, and they'd only moved in recently, and no, they knew nothing about the Tudge story. And off they went. "There's something about them," said Nick, "but I can't quite put my finger on it." The next morning, I was sitting at my desk when Nick burst in, very excited. "I knew there was something about that bloke," he said. "Wait, I'll show you." He delved into the archives again and showed me a photograph of DCS Mayhew. "Now, look closely at his face, especially his eyes, and now think of Merton's face. I know it was mostly covered by a thick beard, but I'll swear that's Mayhew." He printed off a copy of Mayhew's photo and scrawled a beard on it. And sure enough, that was Merton, all right. We grabbed our coats and headed for the door. When we got to Albany Row, it was quiet, except for a dog barking at number 3. We tried number 5, but no answer. The same at number 3. We went round to the alleyway behind the terrace and let ourselves into number 3's garden and crept down the path towards the patio doors. No sign of anyone. But the dog sounded quite panicky and close. A peep through the patio door revealed a room that looked as though it had been ransacked. The furniture was all over the place, and the carpet pulled up in places. There was a distressed Yorkie on a lead that was fixed to a table leg. We could hear voices coming from another room. "We'll have to break the glass," I hissed. But Nick tried the door and it opened. Fortunately, the barking covered any sound we made. We tiptoed into the hallway. The lounge door was slightly ajar and we could see the house sitter in a chair with Merton, oblique Mayhew, standing over her. "We can keep this up all day, Merrill," he said, "and all night if necessary." "I have nothing to say to you," she said. Mayhew's wife looked very uncomfortable. "Lawrence, please, don't you think this has gone far enough?"
"Stay out of it, Liz. I didn't want you to come in the first place," he said.
"This is exactly what I was afraid would happen," she said.
"She's come back from the diamonds, hasn't she? Why else would she be here?" he said. Liz was right. It had gone far enough. We burst in, taking photos with our phones.
"We're from the Chelford Gazette, and these pictures have gone straight to the newspaper," I said, hopefully sounding bolder than I felt.
"This woman is Merrill Tudge," blustered Mayhew, and she's an accessory to jewel theft and is in possession of stolen goods."
We all looked at her. "Before we go any further, would somebody please fetch Mitzi? She's very upset," she said. The little dog was brought into the room and sat on her knee. "Now, only part of what DCS Mayhew said is true," she continued. "I am Merrill Tudge, and I am here to retrieve some diamonds. But Archie isn't your international jewel thief." That was Giuliana Fiorucci. She was a gem dealer as well. They bumped into each other quite frequently, and Archie was very fond of her. She was like the daughter we were never able to have. She was also a circus-trained acrobat, plus she had three children to support after her husband up and left. When the burglaries started, Archie was pretty sure she was responsible, but he'd never have betrayed her to Interpol. And besides, he was beginning to rather enjoy the notoriety. Some of his clients broke off all contact, but for the most part, most of them believed he was innocent, and retirement was approaching anyway. "You were a bit of a pest, though, Mr. Mayhew."
"Whatever," he huffed. "Go on."
Archie was a gem dealer for 25 years, and rather than put money into a building society or pension scheme, he bought a diamond a year and said we'd have enough money to live on very comfortably when he retired. We hid them in the alcove in the hallway. We removed the plaster from the top and put the bag of diamonds in there and replastered it. Unfortunately, Archie had a stroke just after we'd sold the house and was still in hospital when I had to move out, having not told me where he'd hidden them. We moved to France and he recovered. The plan was to come back, tell the new owners what had happened and retrieve them. But sadly, he had another stroke, a massive one this time, and didn't recover. "I knew you were still sniffing around, Mr. Mayhew. You've made that quite clear on social media."
"It really galled me to think he'd got away with it," said Mayhew.
When I went over what I'd say to the new owners, it didn't sound very convincing at all. So I had a few flyers made offering my services as a house and pet sitter. And they answered. I was going to retrieve the diamonds and they'd never know. Well, I have retrieved them, and I'm going to stay here until the Beasleys return, if you don't mind. Mayhew actually looked quite sheepish at this point. His wife said she'd put the kettle on, and Merrill told Mayhew he'd better go and tidy the dining room as he'd made a mess of it. He did. So Nick and I got our story, which wasn't quite the story we thought it would be, and it ended up on the front page. It turns out that Nick is actually very good at this investigative journalism stuff and is destined for great things. Me? Well, it's Open Garden Week next week, and I hear Ivy Morris's scones are better than ever this year.
King of Diamonds was written and read by Amanda Watkins. Incidental music, A Day to Remember, is from bensound.com.